Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to those of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the 27th episode of the Calcio Land podcast. We have a fantastic interview with Jonathan Johnson at the end of the podcast, where we got into Neymar, Fabinho, Mbappe, everything going on with Paris Saint-Germain, Monaco, which have been dominating the transfer news headlines. But before we get to that, I'm joined by our outstanding producer and co-host, Alex. And I wanted to ask you this question. You know, we've talked a lot about transfers on here and a lot of the things that are said publicly about transfers. And we know that a lot of times what directors, presidents, coaches, agents, players say about transfers need to be taken with a grain of salt. But which one is your favorite line that ended up being a lie? And I put that in air quotes on a transfer.
It's a great question. And I'm not choosing this because it had anything to do with Chelsea, but it was something that a lot of Chelsea fans clinged on to and Liverpool fans. And now this player is nowhere to be found. David, only about a year ago, there was a player named Alex Teixeira for Shakhtar. And, you know, Shakhtar's famous for having like a lot of Brazilian talent. Chelsea had been no stranger to getting Brazilian talent from there. They got Willian from Shakhtar. But all of a sudden, Alex Teixeira started talking about how he wanted to play for his Brazilian national team, which is obviously a big goal for a lot of players, play for your national team. And when you play for Brazil, you really got to make sure you're on the right club so you can showcase your talent because they have so much talent. So he became unsettled at Shakhtar, and he started publicly talking about, I even have a quote here. He said, "I am aware that two big clubs such as Liverpool and Chelsea are interested, but I haven't decided yet." The next line was, "I am not ruling out other leagues, but I do want to play in the Premier League. In my mind, it is the strongest in the world." And then he went on to talk about how the whole goal of this was to play for the Brazilian national team. What did he do, David, not too long after? He went to China. So, you know, all of that rubbish about how he wanted to play. And now, first of all, before I continue, I understand money is attractive and I can't critique him from this chair and then say I wouldn't do the same thing in his situation. I just thought it was funny. He publicly kept talking about how he wanted to play for the Brazilian national team. And then he moved to China, which is pretty much ending your chance of playing for your national team. So that's the one I liked, but there are plenty to choose from. David, what's one of your favorites?
So I used to love reading the quotes that Galliano, who used to run Milan's Mercato, said. He was really notorious for this, the 99.99% chance that Ibrahimovic is staying and then right after went to Paris Saint-Germain. Or every time he'd say Milan's market is closed, or that he'd turn around and sell and buy a bunch of players. But I'm going to pick still my favorite run. Remains Paul Pogba telling our good friends on Italian football TV that he was staying at Juve not once, but twice, basically right before he was getting on the plane for Manchester. So that remains my favorite because of the personal connection too we have to the people, you know, that reported that quote. But one team, you know, in general, I always say don't pay any attention to what they say publicly. But there is one team where I think you can make an exception, and that's Bayern Munich. I really think they're the type of club that they are an open book. What they say, they mean. You know, Rummenigge in the past has made some statements. When Lewandowski was rumored to want to leave, they issued a strong statement. Look, you know, you signed the contract, you're not going anywhere. So I take what Bayern Munich says publicly, usually at face value. And I really don't do it with almost anyone else. And the reason I brought him up today, too, is today Ancelotti was talking about Arturo Vidal, who has been linked to Inter. And he said Vidal is staying. And he also talked about Renato Sanchez, you know, the talented young midfielder who struggled to find playing time. And interestingly, he said that he wants Renato Sanchez to continue on his journey of improvement, which you could read between the lines and see it as he needs to go somewhere where he can play. And he's been heavily linked to Milan. Di Marzio today reported that there is some distance, though, between the demand and the offer. If the deal happens, it's going to be on one of those loan deals with option to buy. It might be a forced option to buy. It might be an optional option to buy with a pretty big fee. But I thought Ancelotti's statements were really interesting. A lot of people, you know, point Ancelotti's close ties to Milan. Of course, he played there, was a coach there, as maybe he doesn't want to help Inter by selling Vidal, and he wants to sell Sanchez to Milan to help his former team. I don't see that, to be honest. I think Ancelotti just looks at it as what's best for Bayern. But I will say, ignore pretty much all other statements coming from clubs. But if it comes from Bayern, usually take it seriously. And another thing we take seriously are the fantastic questions that you guys send in using the CalcioLamb hashtag. We didn't do too many today because we wanted to dedicate a lot of time to Jonathan Johnson, because he's really going to answer a lot of the questions you guys have had. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, Alex, which ones are we going to go over today?
All right. Well, it's rare that we start off with an Atalanta question, so let's do it. David, has Atalanta adequately replaced their departures?
So we wanted to start with this one for a couple of reasons. I think it's a very valid feedback that here we focused mainly on the top teams. And tomorrow we're going to make up for that with another guest, Paolo, from my team on the Marzo site. And we're going to take a deeper dive on the mid-table and the newly promoted teams. But Atalanta, you know, of course, was the surprise team last summer. They've lost a lot of significant players. You know, in January, they lost Gagliardini. This summer, they've lost Conti and Kessié. So two big departures. But I think they've done a very good job of, you know, making sure the team's still going to be competitive. A while back, our friend Matthew Santangelo sent a lot of good questions. A very good writer asked us, you know, who's going to be this season's version of Atalanta, and I half jokingly said that my answer is Atalanta. It's going to be a new cast of characters, but I still think they're going to do really well. To me, the key move for them was keeping Papu Gomez, their captain, fantastic player. I went to see Atalanta play against Juve at Juve Stadium last fall, and I actually thought he was the best player on the pitch for both teams. So he's great. They need his leadership as well. They also have a very intriguing offense. They brought in Ilicic from Fiorentina. You know, inconsistent player, but on his day, incredibly talented player. Reminds me a little bit of Vucinic when he was at Juve. Speaking of Juve, Atalanta got Orsolini on loan, one of the most promising strikers from Serie B. A great place for him to develop, so good for Juve to get him there. So they're going to have a very intriguing offense with Gomez, Ilicic, and Orsolini. Those guys are likely going to rotate. Ilicic and Orsolini will likely rotate, and they have Petagna, who's a good central striker, to open spaces for them. You know, Atalanta still has a very good defense. They kept Caldara. It looks like he'll stay. Promising defender, did very well at the under-21 Euro. They still have Toloi, who I think is a very underrated defender as well. And while they lost Conti, that's a big loss, they still have Spinazzola, who's another talented wing back. He plays on the left, a Juve-owned player like Caldara. And they brought in Castagne. I don't know him, but he plays for Genk, used to play for Genk. And that's a club that has a very good track record with young players. So Atalanta still has a very good defense. They're looking to improve the midfield, and they could bring in Rincon from Juve. It's a club they have a great relationship with. So I think Atalanta, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I think keeping Gasperini as manager was really important, and he has a lot of offensive weapons. I think he's going to have a really good time next season.
All right, well, let's move to the old lady. Now that Bonucci is gone, David, will Juventus sign another center back?
It's definitely not a priority at the time. I know there's been a lot of talk of Manolas. As far as I know, there's nothing to that at the moment. I think Juve looks at it that they have four starting caliber center backs. They're not going to use the three center back formation as the primary one next season. So just already there's less of a need. I think they're much more focused on bolstering the midfield. At the moment, Matuidi looks like the favorite. I think they'd really like Emre Can, but looks like Liverpool wants to hold on to him, and Matic looks on his way to Manchester United. So I don't think center back's a priority at the time. I think, you know, towards the end of the window, if a good opportunity is there, Juve might pounce on it. But I think unless there's an injury this summer, they'll be happy to go in with what they have.
All right. Well, staying on Juventus, based on the move so far, is Juventus better, worse, or about the same as last season?
So I asked this Twitter question to my followers. Not surprisingly, the results were pretty mixed. So this is my take on it. I think, you know, obviously offensively, Juve is loaded right now. Mandzukic, I thought, was probably their best player last season. He's probably going to be not a starter because of the additions of Bernardeschi and Douglas Costa. So Juve now has never been this strong on the wings as I can remember in quite some time. So the very deep up front. I think, you know, the defense, though, now that's a much bigger question mark. With Bonucci leaving, sure, Juve still has Chiellini, Barzagli, and Benatia, but all three of them have, you know, fairly important injury concerns there. Barzagli, because of his age, Benatia has never seemed to be able to do a full season by staying healthy. And Chiellini, too, has had numerous issues in the past few years. So there's a lot of pressure on Rugani. And I know a lot of people are tweeting that Rugani was better than Bonucci when they were the same age, or at Rugani's age now. And that very well be true. But to me, that doesn't really matter. What matters is if Rugani or Benatia together, or one of them, can give Juve about the same as what Bonucci would have given. So I think it's inevitable that the back line's not going to be as good. But I'm going to go back to a quote that we talked about on Monday, something I heard Paolo Maldini say, is that in a way he thinks Juve might be better in the Champions League because the teams that tend to win it with great offenses. And sure, it's great that Juve by far had the best back line, but that doesn't seem to have been rewarded with winning the cup, at least recently. So to me, I look at Juve as about the same. To me, it's really important that they improve the midfield. Sure, Marchisio's coming back fully healthy. That's a very good sign. I just don't think it's Juve fans can expect Khedira to stay as healthy as he was. So at this moment, I'd say for me, Juve is about the same. I think they're going to miss, though, Dani Alves more than people realize. Sure, you know, he was old and a lot of things have been said about his character. But I go back to the fact that just like last April, a lot of people were talking about Dani Alves being the signing of the year. So let's not underestimate that. Big pressure on De Sciglio to help replace him. Of course, you know, the offensive wingers are going to help with that as well because Dani Alves had great performances as an offensive winger. But until Juve signs a really good midfielder, I can't say that they're better. So I'll answer it that way.
Good point about the great offense. They always say, at least here in the United States, that defense wins championships, but great offense beats great defense. So that was an interesting point. All right, let's move on. Is it true that Lucas Torreira has a $15 million exit clause?
So he's one of the most exciting young midfielders in Serie A. I think both Dre Cordero and Matteo Bonetti mentioned him when we asked him about players they like in Serie A. Really, really good young midfielder, born in 96, so really, really young. As far as I know, he doesn't have this exit clause, but you know, he's been linked to other clubs, especially Sevilla. I think Sampdoria, for the right price, would sell him also because they've been trying to give him a raise and they don't have a great relationship with his agent. One thing that I was researching, the exit clause that stood out to me is Sampdoria, the great business that they've done. They were able to sign Skriniar, who went to Inter for, I think, around 20 million euro. Patrick Schick, who, you know, was supposed to go to Juve, may still go there, might go to another club for around 25, 30 million. And then they have Torreira, who at least is worth 15, 20. And to sign all three of those players, they only paid 6.5 million. And if they cash in on all three, will turn a huge profit. So a lot of credit to them for their scouting.
All right, the last Twitter question is a juicy one, in my opinion. David, what are the odds Roma lands Leicester City player Riyad Mahrez?
So there's quite a bit of distance between what Leicester's asking and what Roma is offering. Roma is around 30 million, including bonuses. Leicester wants closer to 40 million. Now, what helps Roma is that Leicester would much rather sell them abroad, and they're quoting them a much lower price than, say, Arsenal or the Premier League clubs after him. So it's going to be an interesting scenario. What I find, you know, so I would say it's about 50-50 there that it happened. What I find interesting is if Roma ends up spending almost as much to sign Mahrez as they did, what they got for Salah, that would be a little bit odd. I mean, Salah was so great in Serie A. We don't know if Roma would be getting the Mahrez from the first season at Leicester or the second one. I also kind of find it interesting with Monchi in general, his moves. I've been a little bit surprised with, like, you know, players like Gonalons and Mahrez coming in. You know, big names. I thought he'd go more for young talents that he could then, you know, really develop. So I find this situation pretty interesting. I think we'll know more about Mahrez soon. You know, in the meantime, Roma at least signed De Frel, who I think is a very good signing, and he can help offset a little bit of Salah's departure as well. So we want to thank all you guys for sending in the questions. We have a great interview coming with Jonathan Johnson, so be sure to tune in for that. Okay, so with Paris Saint-Germain and Monaco being in the transfer news headlines for a variety of reasons, I couldn't think of a better person to have as a guest today than Jonathan Johnson, who is my colleague at ESPN FC. He covers the French league overall, but especially Paris Saint-Germain. So he can really give us a great perspective on all the potential transfer moves and even on the players that have already joined new teams. So, Jonathan, we are thrilled to have you on CalcioLand. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure.
Fantastic. So let's start with Paris Saint-Germain as a whole. You know, very often since I've been covering transfers, a lot of people, you know, assume that because Liga, for the most part, has been a one-team league, that a lot of their players could leave to look for more challenges and whatnot. But to me, Paris Saint-Germain has really developed a reputation for being a club that simply refuses to negotiate the potential sale of the players that they do want to keep. We've seen that on quite a few occasions in recent years. So I wanted to ask you if you agree with this assessment and if you think this reputation is well deserved.
Yeah, I do. And I, you know, I actually think that there's a number of reasons why PSG get criticized by football fans for what they've done since the Qataris arrived back in 2011. But, you know, one thing I think that they actually really deserve praise for is the way that they handle some of these star players that they sign onto big contracts when those players, you know, receive interest from other clubs. You know, PSG's owners, the Qataris, they're not afraid to remind these players that they signed up to these big contracts and they're expected to honor those contracts. And if they want to, you know, leave the club, they have to see that contract out before they're able to do so, because PSG simply, you know, when they buy a player and intend for them to be a star player, you know, they have no intention of selling them for the duration of that contract. Now, I think what's, you know, been so interesting so far this summer with regards to this topic is, you know, what's happened with somebody like Marco Verratti, you know, because people say have made a lot out of, like, you know, Verratti potentially, you know, being held prisoner by PSG's Qatari owners. But that's not the case. You know, people have to remember that Verratti and his former agent, Donato Di Campoli, you know, they were serial contract renewers. They renewed contract twice. Last year. Yeah. So I, you know, I think that for PSG to handle Verratti the way that they handled him this summer when Barcelona came in for him, you know, was completely understandable. You know, at the end of the day, PSG are prepared to pay these players big amounts of money, so they feel entitled to expect a bit of loyalty from them. You know, it's not just happened with somebody like Verratti. We've seen it in the past with Edinson Cavani. We saw it before that as well with Thiago Silva as well. So, you know, I don't think that you know, PSG's Qatari owners are going to be changing the way that they, you know, handle their star players anytime soon. You know, if you sign up, you're a big star name, and you sign a big fat contract with PSG, you're going to be expected to see it out. And if you're not prepared to do that, and you think you might want to move on, you know, and try a different challenge in a year or two, you know, you should probably think twice about joining PSG.
I can't agree more with this answer. And I'm glad that you brought up Verratti, because she's who I wanted to ask about you next. So I go to Paris, you know, at least once a year. It's one of my favorite cities. You know, the thing that really stands out to me is how beloved Verratti is at Paris Saint-Germain. You know, I got the impression even when Ibra was there that Verratti was probably the idol of the fans there. And, you know, a lot of fans of other teams are like, you know, why does he want to stay on this team that, you know, for the most part has dominated Liga? Why doesn't he want a bigger challenge? And I always like to remind people that these aren't just footballers, like they're people as well. Verratti, you know, loves life in Paris. Also, the media isn't like in Italy. He's mentioned that a few times. There's a lot less drama. So I wanted to get your perspective on how Verratti is viewed in Paris and how you think he likes living there, you know, beyond what happens on the pitch.
I mean, Verratti is, you know, he's seen as a, you know, an absolute god in Paris to the PSG fans. You know, he really is the prince of the park, so to speak. You know, he is the most popular player among PSG fans. Right now, you know, okay, with the potential arrival of Neymar, you know, maybe we'll see that change in the near future. But at the moment, you know, Verratti is, you know, head and shoulders above anyone else in the squad. There is, you know, a lot of consternation among PSG fans when it was, you know, the possibility of him leaving for Barcelona came up earlier this summer. And yeah, you know, Verratti, by all accounts, you know, is very, very happy in Paris. You know, he's, He has his family here. He's, you know, he's got a child with his partner. I think he's got a second on the way as well. He said that he feels, you know, absolutely at home in Paris. And unlike Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you know, Verratti has been effusive in his praise of the city that, you know, he now calls home. You know, he loves it in Paris, and he's not afraid to let people know that. And Ibrahimovic never really did that. And that's one of the reasons why, as much of a legend as he is for PSG, certainly in statistical terms, there's not that same emotional attachment that the PSG fans had with Zlatan that they have currently with Verratti. You know, and that's one of the things why I think he loves his life in Paris so much, you know, because he, I don't think would have that rapport with the fans in many other clubs in Europe. And like you said, you know, life in Paris allows him a certain degree of privacy that he wouldn't be able to get back home in Italy, and probably wouldn't be able to get in a lot of other football crazy countries as well.
Without a doubt. So you mentioned earlier his longtime agent, Donato Di Campi. He recently switched and went with Mino Raiola. You know, what I found ironic is for so many times Paris Saint-Germain fans have been demanding that Verratti fire Di Campi because he was making all these quotes about wanting to leave almost every summer, which seemed to me like a ploy to get a new contract. So you go from Di Campi to now Mino Raiola, who, of course, you know, has an even bigger reputation as a deal maker and someone that can get players to move. But at the same time, I found it interesting that you said stars don't leave PSG until their contracts expire. And that's what we saw with Ibrahimovic, who was one of Raiola's clients last summer. Matuidi was trying to leave and PSG said, no, we're going to keep you. Do you think Mino Raiola is going to be able to do something different with Verratti, or what we saw with Ibrahimovic and Matuidi is going to be par for the course with Verratti as well?
I mean, I think, first of all, I'd like to say that, you know, I think it was about time that Verratti got rid of Di Campi. You know, I think Di Campi majorly overstepped the mark with some of the comments that he made, some of the pressure that he was putting on PSG, you know, and I think it's a good thing that that Verratti has found somebody else. I mean, I think one thing you need to bear in mind with Raiola, yes, Raiola has a reputation for moving his clients around a lot. However, he also has a reputation since the Qataris took over in Paris, you know, of having very good relationships with PSG's owners, you know, and he's had a number of clients stay there for, you know, quite a lengthy period of time. You know, we've already spoken about Ibrahimovic, then you've got the likes of Maxwell, you know, Matuidi as well, who you mentioned. You know, he's got Alphonse Areola, the goalkeeper who he picked up quite recently, you know, and now he has Verratti as well. So what I think Raiola and Verratti will do now is I expect them to negotiate a new contract with PSG to reflect Verratti's key status. That'll probably have to wait until after the Neymar saga is cleared up to see, you know, if PSG can afford to offer him a significant rise in salary. And I think what PSG will then say is, okay, we've proved to you that we're ambitious. You know, now we want you to give us, I don't know, one season, two seasons, to prove that they can really match up to the ambition that that Verratti has, you know, and start challenging for the Champions League title, continue to dominate the domestic scene. Okay, they didn't win Ligue 1 last season because of a fantastic Monaco side, but overall, since the Qataris arrived, PSG have been extremely dominant in France. I think that there will be a return to normal service in the season coming, and I think that PSG will say to Verratti and Raiola, okay, we're prepared to give you new terms, but you need to give us one, probably two seasons to for this new or this the next phase of this ambitious PSG project to take shape.
So you're speaking about the ambition of PSG, and I think nothing describes it more than their efforts to sign Neymar, who has that enormous exit clause. And not only is there Neymar, they're also linked to Alexis Sanchez, who I guess, Arsenal would rather see him in Paris than, say, at Manchester City. Of the two, which one do you think is more likely? And do you think they'd even be able to sign both this summer?
I don't think that ultimately PSG will be able to sign both. I get the feeling that PSG, they are. It's a fact that they are pursuing both Neymar and Sanchez at this moment in time. However, the interest in Sanchez is cooling a bit, and that seems to reflect the fact that they are closing in on the signature of Neymar. And I think Sanchez is seen, perhaps as a plan B to Neymar, particularly considering that if they were to sign, both would sort of occupy that place on the left-hand side of the front three that PSG have. So I think that at this moment in time, certainly given what's happened in the last couple of days, it looks more likely that Neymar is going to sign for PSG than Sanchez. And I think the only way that we're going to see Sanchez signing for PSG this summer is if they don't get Neymar. So, I think we'll probably know an answer to that question in the next 7 to 10 days. But I think at this moment in time, Neymar is by far and away PSG's first choice. And I think that he is the more likely of the two to sign at this moment in time.
Yeah, I kind of see it the same way as well. So let's talk about a player that joined Paris Saint-Germain in January. It's rare to see players of the caliber of Julian Draxler to leave during the winter transfer window. So I wanted to see, what do you expect from him this season? Do you think it's possible he gets lost a little bit in the shuffle if PSG keeps pursuing these big names up front?
I mean, I think, Draxler is, he's done very, very well since joining PSG. I think that Patrick Kluivert did very little in his time as director of football in Paris. But, the one massive positive that I think he deserves praise for is the way that he brought Draxler in and the impact that Draxler had on PSG over the second half of the season. Because it wasn't just what Draxler did on the pitch. It's the fact that, he really, helped to reinvigorate Angel Di Maria, who had an awful first half of last season, but was much, much better in the second half. And I think that Draxler is becoming a key player for PSG. And what will be most interesting, assuming that PSG do end up getting hold of one of Neymar or Alexis Sanchez, is then where, Angel Di Maria figures in PSG's plans, because Draxler has been so impressive and he's quite polyvalent as well, so he could play anywhere in that front three. I'm curious to know whether it would be Draxler who would occupy that berth on the right-hand side, or whether it would be Di Maria, because, obviously Di Maria has the experience and has what he's done in the past that speaks for him. But Draxler has been extremely impressive so far since joining PSG. And he was also very, very good at the Confederations Cup with Germany as well. And if he hits the ground running at the beginning of this coming season, I see no reason why he shouldn't be a member of that starting 11 under Unai Emery. But of course, if PSG do sign Neymar, there's been plenty said about Neymar's close relationship with Lucas Moura at this moment in time. With Neymar not a member of PSG's squad, Lucas is a player that PSG would not mind moving on. There's been plenty of clubs linked with moves for him. Roma are particularly interested in him, as I'm led to believe. But it seems like if Neymar does join, PSG are very unlikely to let go of somebody like Lucas Moura. So that's another player that they would have to accommodate. And obviously he'd be in competition with Draxler as well for a place in that front three, because you'd have to imagine, based on the fantastic campaign that he had last term, that the Cavani, his position won't be under threat. And it all depends really again on who PSG managed to bring in out of Neymar and Sanchez. But if PSG for whatever reason were unable to bring in Neymar or Sanchez and go into the season with that front three of Draxler on the left, Cavani in the middle, and Di Maria on the right, still one of the best front three in Europe. You know, that is a very, very talented attacking unit. And, you know, and I think that, you know, Draxler, whatever happens in the transfer window of PSG in the next couple of weeks, you know, he is going to have a key role to play in this coming season.
So let's talk about a couple of players that have already left Liga to join other teams before we ask you about some players that could be on the move. I think Bayern Munich made one of the best moves of the summer by signing Tolisso from Lyon, got him quickly at what looks like a very good price. I've only seen him, you know, I've seen him in the Champions League with Lyon. I watched him a little bit in Liga, but you know him much better than I do. What can Bayern fans expect from a player like Tolisso?
I mean, Tolisso is a fabulous player, and I think what's so great about him is that he is so versatile. You know, he's not just a midfielder; he can play a number of different positions. You know, he's more defensive than offensive. You know, he's played at fullback as well in the past for Lyon. But what is so great about him is he's such a complete player. He's very he's very much an all rounder. As with any player that comes through that fantastic Lyon Youth Academy, you know, he is very technically gifted. You know, he has a great football in mind as well. And he is, you know, he's a player that I think Bayern have done really well to pick up. And I think that he'll serve Carlo Ancelotti extremely well over the coming season or so, depending on how long he stays with Bayern. But, you know, he's a player who can help Bayern now. You know, both in the starting 11 and also as a member of the squad. You know, but I think he definitely has the makings of somebody who, you know, can impose himself and command a place in that regular starting 11, you know, over the next couple of years. I think he is, I think he maybe overstayed his time at Lyon when you reflect on how the season went last season for Lyon. You could probably say the same about Alexandre Lacazette and certainly Maxime Gonalons as well. But, you know, I think that of all of those players, you know, I think it probably harmed Tolisso and Lacazette the least. And I'm curious to see how he adapts to Bundesliga football. You know, but he is a very complete player. And I think it was, like you said, one of the best pieces of business so far this summer.
So another player that left Liga to join a big club is Bakayoko, left Monaco to join Chelsea. So, you know, a lot of times fans are guilty of making big assumptions based on a few matches they see in the Champions League or statistics. How would you describe Bakayoko to Chelsea fans, and do you think he can succeed in the Premier League?
Yeah, definitely think that he can succeed in the Premier League. I think he's made for the Premier League. He is he's a very physical player. Also gifted technically, you know, he's very, very imposing. You know, and I think he has more to his game as well than somebody like an N'Golo Kante. You know, and I think the two could pair up quite nicely in the midfield. You know, Bakayoko as well, very useful from set pieces, as he showed in the Champions League last season. And the only thing that Chelsea fans might have to be a bit wary of, and it's the reason why it held up his transfer for so long, is he does have you know, a bit of a weakness when it comes to injuries. And I know that he has a bit of a niggling knee issue at the moment. So, you know, once he's put that behind him, you know, I'm sure he's going to turn out to be a very good signing for Chelsea. I'm sure that Antonio Conte is going to be able to get, you know, the best out of him. And I think it was, like with many of these Monaco players this summer, it was the right time for him to move on, because I don't really think that he could help Monaco to achieve much more than they did last season. You know, I think they massively overachieved. And I think that, you know, he has made the right decision to go and challenge himself in the Premier League, because I think it suits him extremely well. And I think, you know, the Chelsea fans will appreciate his all-action style.
That's music to the ears of my producer, Alex, I'm sure. So let's talk. Neymar's the big headline, but another player that's been talked a lot about is Bakayoko's former teammate Mbappe. Do you expect the transfer to Real Madrid to happen this summer, especially after Real Madrid just cashed in on Morata and Danilo? Do you expect Mbappe to stay at least one more season at Monaco?
I mean, I don't expect Mbappe to leave Monaco this summer, but at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if Monaco ultimately see crazy money being offered and decide to accept it. I think the best thing for Mbappe's career at this moment in time would be to stay for one more season at Monaco. I don't think it would be unreasonable for him to expect a significant wage rise. And the Monaco vice president Vadim Vasiliev has come out and admitted that Monaco are in talks with Mbappe to extend his contract to give him improved terms. I think he merits that for the phenomenal second half of last season that he had. But at the same time, I'm not going to say that Mbappe is an unproven talent, because obviously he's worked his way out to senior international level already and did some absolutely astonishing things in the Champions League as well as in Ligue 1 last campaign. But I think what Mbappe now needs to prove is that he's able to do it over the course of a full season, because basically we're talking about a player who's built up his reputation over the period of a couple of months really, which is the second half of last season. I think now he needs to be a regular starter in Leonardo Jardim's Monaco side next season. I don't think he can expect, and I don't think other people should expect Monaco to have the same sort of success or enjoy the same sort of success that they did last term. But as Vasilio said when he was unveiling some of the summer transfers made by Monaco so far, he expects the same clubs that are interested in Mbappe this summer to be interested in him next summer as well. And I think that, although the temptation must be huge for Mbappe to go to his childhood club, Real Madrid, I think that it would be wise for him to stay put at this moment in time. And there's plenty of tempting offers on the table to him. PSG very keen on him as well, because PSG at the end of the day want to get one of Mbappe, Neymar, or Sanchez, particularly either Neymar or Mbappe. But I think the best move for Mbappe at this moment in time, despite all of these enticing offers that are being put in front of him, is to stay at Monaco for one more season, play regular Ligue 1 football, regular domestic cup football, regular Champions League football, prove himself over the course of a full season, really lead that Monaco side, and then move on next summer. But whether or not Monaco decides to cash in, we'll have to wait and see.
So let's close before I ask you a little bit about your writing career, which I'm fascinated to learn more about, on a player that's been mentioned a lot in the transfer news headlines. And this is Fabinho, who's been linked both to Manchester United and Paris Saint-Germain as well. Now Monaco is saying that him and Lemar will stay this summer. Do you expect Fabinho to join a new team or to stay put?
I did expect him to move on this summer. In fact, I thought he'd be one of the first players out of the door, but the way that things have turned out, it looks at this moment in time like he's trapped at Stade Louis-II. And when I say trapped, Fabinho is a very polite guy. I don't think that many people really get the full picture of what's going on at Monaco right now with regards to his situation, because I think he has too much respect towards Monaco to force the move through. But as I understand it, there was a gentleman's agreement reached midway through last season that Fabinho would be granted a transfer if a suitable offer came in, and summer came round, and the move that Fabinho ended up being really convinced by and really wanting to make was to PSG. And obviously at the time when the gentleman's agreement was reached, Monaco hadn't won the Ligue 1 title, and PSG didn't appear to be interested in Fabinho, so Monaco were happy to grant him that provisional move. And now that the interest that has really manifested itself more than any other has come from PSG, Monaco are reluctant to grant Fabinho that move. And, I think Fabinho feels frustrated at the moment. I mean, I think he sees staying at Monaco as potentially blocking his chances of guaranteeing a place in Brazil's squad for the World Cup in 2018, because unless they're playing in the Champions League, he doesn't really get noticed as much as some of his compatriots do at PSG. And that's one of the reasons why the move to PSG appeals so much, that and the fact that Antero Henrique is now PSG's sporting director and has convinced him thoroughly, being a Portuguese speaker as well, it was probably an easier task than it would be convincing somebody like Alexis Sanchez, speaking Spanish and it not being Enrique's first language. But anyway, Enrique convinced Fabinho to make the move from Monaco to PSG. But Monaco have told PSG in no uncertain terms they're not prepared to strengthen the team that they see as their, you know, their direct rivals for the Ligue 1 title, which is completely understandable. But it's left Fabinho in a difficult situation, because at the end of the day, all these other teams that have been interested in him over the last couple of months, the likes of Atletico Madrid, Manchester United, their interest has cooled a little bit now. Atletico Madrid less so than the likes of Manchester United. But then again, if Fabinho is to make the move to Atletico, he's not going to be able to play for the first 6 months of the season, because Atletico have a ban on registering players until January next year. So Fabinho at the moment is, you know, stuck between a rock and a hard place, so to speak. And, you know, he wants that move to PSG, as far as I know, but is not going to be granted it. But it'll be interesting to, you know, to know what happens with that situation, or to see what happens with that situation if, say, Thomas Lemar and Kylian Mbappe are both allowed to leave this summer, because, you know, then Fabinho will pretty much be, the only real sort of cornerstone of that team that did so well last season under Jardim left. And, you know, I think it would be unfair to sort of make him stay against his will, you know, especially if PSG are prepared to offer crazy money for his signature, which it sounded like until the Neymar interest, they were prepared to do. Whether or not, you know, they're in a position to do that if they manage to pull off the Neymar deal, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I feel sorry for Fabinho, because I think that he's deserved a move, whether it was to PSG or not. You know, and at this moment in time, it doesn't look like he's going to get it.
I really appreciate your fascinating insight on all these hot topics. So let's close on this. I have to be honest, being an English language correspondent in Paris sounds fantastic to me, and I trade places with you tomorrow. So I wanted to ask you how you got into sports writing, and what advice would you give to the many listening that, you know, have blogs, YouTube channels, and are looking to break into the business?
I mean, I started out basically as somebody who just loved football, loved playing it, loved reading about it, loved talking about it. And as soon as I realized that I wasn't really good enough to forge a career for myself playing football, I wanted to make sure that I stayed close to the sport that I loved the most. So what I decided to do, you know, what my sort of passion was football journalism. So ever since quite a young age, I've been writing articles, and it just sort of built up from there. I started off by getting some work experience with newspapers, and then I went to work for Sky Sports, started off just as a runner there, worked my way up to an assistant producer before deciding that it was really time to go and do what I wanted to do, which was to be a foreign football correspondent, either in France or Italy, because Serie A was one of my other real passions. But I decided to go with what I was more familiar with, having spent a couple of years with my family earlier in my life living in France. That's when I picked up my interest in PSG. So I, at that moment in time, when I saw the Qataris were arriving in Paris, I decided to make the move back to France, and, you know, sort of put all my eggs in the QSI basket. And okay, it was a bit of a slow start for PSG under the Qataris, but, you know, it's gradually built up to this to this massive project. And for me, you know, being here and sort of being able to cover it on a day-to-day basis, it's, you know, brought me some fantastic opportunities, and that's why I'm in the position that I'm in now. Because, you know, over time, I've, you know, gradually added together a number of different positions, and now find myself covering, you know, one of the biggest clubs in Europe, and, you know, potentially about to witness the biggest transfer story of all time go down. So it's been a crazy journey for me over the past sort of 5, 6, 7 years. But it's, you know, the advice that I give young aspiring journalists is to be absolutely sure that they want to get into journalism to start with. And to be prepared to, you know, go through a lot of difficulties before sort of getting to the sort of position that they want to be in. I mean, the thing that helps you so much, especially in my experience, is identifying, you know, your niche, which for me obviously is French football and English, but also, you know, works the other way as well. I can do English football in French. You know, and I think to have a strong niche like that really, really helps anybody who's aspiring to get into journalism, especially today when there's so many people that want to break into this this line of work. You know, I think that it's absolutely imperative that you have something perhaps not unique, but something that not many other people can offer. And, you know, that you then are prepared to, you know, put in a lot of hard work and perhaps, you know, not be paid in the sort of way that you would hope for the first sort of like year or so, because it does take you a long time to get your feet under the table in this, in this sort of line of work. But once you do that, you know, it can be extremely rewarding. So I would say that, you know, the best possible piece of advice that I could give to aspiring journalists would be to identify your niche and then to try and exploit that.
Great advice, and we really appreciate all your insight, Jonathan. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you again on the show. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for having me on, guys. It was an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to being back soon.